This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Mr. President by Katie Evans, narrated by Isabel Gordon and John Lane. 1. Your name is Matthew. Charlotte. We're in a suite at the Jefferson Hotel where Benton Carlyle, the campaign manager, is smoking his second pack of Camels by the open window. Exactly 8/10 of a mile from here, the White House stands all lit up for the evening. All of the televisions inside the suite are set on different news channels, where the anchors continue reporting on the ballot counting progress of this year's presidential election. The names of the candidates are being tossed around in speculation. Three names, to be exact. The Republican candidate, the Democratic candidate, and the first truly strong independent candidate in U.S. history, the son of an ex-president, and at barely 35, the youngest contender in history. My feet are killing me. I've been wearing the same clothes since I left my apartment this morning, headed to the polling station, and cast in my vote. The entire team that has been campaigning for the past year together met here at noon, at this suite. We've been here for over 12 hours. The air is thick with tension, especially when he walks into the living room after taking a break and heading into one of the bedrooms to talk to his grandfather, who's been calling from New York. His tall, wide-shouldered frame looms in the doorway. The men in the room stand, the women straighten. There's just something about him that draws the eye. His height, his strong but unnervingly warm gaze, the polished ruggedness that only makes him look more male in a business suit, and his infectious smile, so real and engaging you can't help but smile back. His eyes pause on me, visually measuring the distance between us. I left for an errand and just came back, and of course he notices. I try to stay composed. I brought you something for the wait. I speak as smoothly as I can and head into one of the bedrooms with a tightly closed brown bag meant to appear to be food. He follows me. He doesn't close the door, I notice that, but he pushes it back so that only an inch remains open, giving us as much privacy as possible. I pull out a crisp men's black jacket and pass it to him. You forgot your jacket, I say. He glances down at his jacket, then the most beautiful, dark espresso eyes raise to mine. One glance. One brush of fingers, one second of recognition. His voice is low, almost intimate. That would have been difficult to explain. Our eyes hold. I almost can't let go of his jacket, and he almost doesn't want to take it. He reaches out and takes it, his smile soft and rueful, and his gaze perceptive. I know exactly why that smile is rueful, why it is soft with tenderness. Because I'm barely hanging in there tonight, and there is no way that this man who knows it all, doesn't know. Matthew Hamilton, possible future president of the United States. He sets his jacket aside and makes no move to leave the room, and I glance out the window as I try not to stare at his every move. Through the open window, a breeze that smells of recent rain and Carlyle cigarettes flits into the room. D.C. seems quieter tonight than usual, the city so still it seems to be holding its breath along with the rest of the country, along with me. Quietly, we head into the living room to join the others. I'm careful to take a spot in the room that's nearly opposite his. Instinct. Self-preservation, maybe.
They're saying you've got Ohio,
Carlyle updates him.
Yeah?
Matt asks, quirking a brow. Then he glances around the room, whistles for Jack, his shiny black German Shepherd lab mix, to come. The dog darts across the room and leaps onto the couch, setting himself on Matt's lap and letting him stroke the top of his head.
That's right, Roger. The Matt Hamilton campaign pulled off an impressive feat this year until, well, that incident,
the anchors discuss. Matt grabs the remote and turns it off. He glances at me briefly. One more connection. One more silent look. The room falls silent. In my experience, guys love talking about themselves and their accomplishments. Matt, on the contrary, avoids it, as if he's sick of rehashing the tragedy of his life story, the story that has been the center of the media's attention since his campaign began.
You can note varying degrees of respect in a person's voice when they talk about a particular U.S. president. For some presidents, the degree is non-existent, the tone more like contempt. For others, the name is turned into something magical and inspiring, filling you with the same feeling you're supposed to get when you look at a red, white, and blue American flag, pride and hope. Such was the case with the Lawrence Hamilton presidency, the administration started by Matt's father several terms ago. My own father, who until then had supported the opposite party, soon became a staunch Democratic supporter, swayed by President Hamilton's charisma. The man's incredible connection with people spread across not just the nation, but overseas, improving our international relations. I was 11 when I was first introduced to Hamilton's legendary charm. Matt Hamilton, in his teens when his dad began his first term, had everything, his future bright. I, on the other hand, was still very much a girl, with no idea who I was or where I was going. Over a decade later, even now, I struggle with the sense of failure of having not lived up to something important. A meaningful job and a guy that I loved. Those were things I wanted. My parents wanted more from me. Politics. I went into social services instead. But no matter how many people I've helped, how much I've told myself that being an adult only means that I will be in my prime to really make a difference, I cannot help but feel like I not only didn't live up to what my parents wanted for me, but what I wanted for myself. Because at this very moment, as we wait for the next president of the United States to be announced, both of those dreams of mine hang in the air, and I'm afraid when the results come in, they will both vanish my hopes into nothing. I wait silently as the men create conversation, Matt's voice reaching me occasionally. Ignoring him feels impossible, but it's all I can manage today. The suite is grand, decorated to appeal to the tastes of those who can afford rooms that cost $1,000 a night, the kind of hotel to offer mints on your pillows, and they have been extra hospitable to us because Matt's a celebrity. They've gone as far as to send up yogurt pretzels after the press made sure everyone knew they're his favorite. There was even a bottle of champagne being chilled. Matt asked one of the campaign aides to remove it from the room. Everyone was surprised. They all felt that it meant Matt thought they'd lost the election. I know that's not the case, instinctively. I simply know if the results are not what he hoped for, he won't want that cool champagne sitting there, a reminder of his loss. Leaving Jack on the couch, he restlessly stalks across the room and takes a seat beside his campaign manager by the window, and he lights a cigarette. Memories play in my head, of my lips circling the same cigarette that was on his lips. I watch Jack, his warm puppy eyes and lightly wagging tail, to avoid looking at him. The dog raises his head on alert as Mark walks into the room, breathless, eyes wide, as if he cannot believe whatever it is that just happened, or is happening. He informs the room that the count is in, and as he announces the name of the next president of the United States of America, Matt's gaze locks with mine. One look, 1 second, one name. I close my eyes and duck my head upon hearing the news, the sense of loss overwhelming me. 2. And Matthew is how I've thought of you for years. Charlotte. 10 months earlier. Ever since I started working full-time, my days seem to have gotten longer and my evenings shorter. As I've grown older, big gatherings have lost much of their former appeal, while letting loose among small groups of friends is something I now very much enjoy. I'm having a birthday today, and our booth holds my best friend Kayla, her boyfriend Sam, myself, and Alan, a sort of a friend-slash-suitor, and the one who insisted I celebrate at least for a little while tonight. You're 22 today, baby, Kayla says as she raises her cocktail glass in my direction. I hope now you will finally drag your ass out to vote in next year's presidential election. I groan. The options so far nothing to get excited about. The current struggling and unlikable president who is up for a second term, or the opposite party candidates, some who are just too hard to take seriously considering the radical ideology they're embracing. Sometimes it feels like they're just saying the craziest thing that comes to mind to snatch themselves some airtime. It'd be exciting if Matt Hamilton stepped up, Sam adds. My drink sloshes over my sweater at the mention of him. He has my vote on automatic, Sam continues. Really? Kayla quirks a saucy eyebrow and keeps on hitting the tequila. Charlotte knows Hammy. I scoff and quickly wipe away the damp spot on my sweater. I do not. I really do not, I assure the guys, then shoot a scowl Kayla's way. I don't know where you get that.
I got that from you.
I shake my head, shooting her an evil eye. We've met, but that doesn't imply I know him. I don't know the first thing about him. I know as much about him as you all do, and the press is hardly reliable. God, I don't know why I told Kayla the things I did about Matthew Hamilton, at an age when I was young and clearly very impressionable. I made the mistake of declaring to my best friend that I wanted to marry the guy, but even then, I at least had the wits to extract a promise that she'd never tell a soul. Kid promises always tend to seem so childish when we're adults, I guess, and she doesn't mind hinting at it now.
Come on, you do know him. You crushed on him for years, Kayla says, laughing.
I watch her boyfriend give me an apologetic look. I think Kay's ready to go home.
I am so not drunk enough, she protests as he eases her out of the booth.
She groans but allows him to pull her to her feet, and then turns to Alan.
How does it feel to compete with the hottest man in history?
Excuse me? Alan asks.
People Magazine's Sexiest Man Alive, you know, Kayla recounts. How does it feel to compete with him?
Alan sends Sam a look that definitely says, yeah, she's ready to go home, man. She's so wasted, I apologize to Alan. Come here, Kay, I say as I wrap my arm around her waist while Sam lets her lean on his shoulder. Together, we help her outside and into a cab Alan has hailed for her, sending them on their way. Alan and I jump into the next cab. He gives the cabbie my address, then turns to me.
What did she mean?
Nothing. I glance out the window, my stomach caving in on itself. I try to laugh it off, but I feel sick to my stomach thinking of people actually knowing how infatuated I was with Matt Hamilton. I'm 22. This happened 10-11 years ago. A little girl's crush.
A crush that's been crushed, right?
I smile. Of course, I reassure him. Then turn to stare out at the blinking city lights as we head across town to drop me home.
A crush that's been crushed, of course.
You can't seriously crush on someone you've only seen, like, what, twice? The second time was so fleeting and at such an overwhelming moment in time, and the first, well. It was 11 years ago, and I somehow remember everything about it. It's still the most exciting day I can recall, even though I don't like the effect that meeting President Hamilton's son had on my teenage years. I was 11. We lived in a two-story brownstone east of Capitol Hill in Washington, D.C. My father, my mother, a tabby cat named Percy, and I. We each had a daily routine. I went to school, mother went to the Women of the World offices, dad went to the Senate, and Percy gave us the silent treatment when we all got home. We didn't stray far from that routine, as my parents preferred, but that day something exciting happened. Percy was sent to my room, which meant that Mom didn't want him causing mischief. He curled up on the foot of my bed, licking his paws, not interested in the noises downstairs. He only paused to occasionally stare at me as I peered through a tiny slit in my doorway. I'd been sitting there for the last 10 minutes, watching the Secret Service walk in and out of my home. They spoke in hushed tones into their headsets.
Robert, one last time, this one or this one?
My mother's voice floated into my bedroom from across the hall. This one. My father sounded distracted. He was probably getting dressed. There was a pregnant pause, and I could almost feel my mother's disappointment.
I think I'll wear this one, she said.
My mother always asked Dad what to wear for special evenings, but if he didn't pick the dress she wanted, she wore the one she'd hoped he'd choose. I could picture my mother putting away the black one and carefully setting the red dress down on the bed. My father didn't like it when my mother got too much attention, but my mother loves it. And why not? She has stunning green eyes and a thick mane of blonde hair. Though my dad is 20 years older and looks it, my mother looks younger by the day. I dreamt of growing up to be as beautiful and poised as she is. I wondered what time it was. My stomach growled as the scent of spices teased my nostrils. Rosemary? Basil? I got them all mixed up no matter how many times Jessa, our housekeeper, explained which is which. Downstairs, the chef from some fancy restaurant was cooking in our kitchen. The Secret Service had been preparing the house for hours.
I was told the president's food would be tasted before it was served to him. The food looked so delicious I'd gladly taste every morsel. But Father asked Jessa to bring me back upstairs. He didn't want me to attend because I was too young. So what, I thought. People used to get married at my age. I was old enough to stay home alone. They wanted me to act mature, like a lady. But what was the point if I never got to act the part they'd been grooming me for?
It's a business dinner. It's not a party, and God knows we need things to go well,
Dad grumbled when I tried to plead my case. Dad, I groaned, I can behave.
You really think Charlotte can behave?
He shot my mother a glance, and my mother smiled at me.
You're not 11 until next week. You're too young for these events. It'll be nothing but talk of politics. Just stay up in your room.
But it's the president, I said with so much conviction. My voice trembled. My mom stepped out of her bedroom in that glorious red dress that tastefully draped over her figure and spotted me eagerly peering down at the excitement downstairs.
Charlotte, she said with a sigh.
I straightened up from my crouched position. She sighed again, then walked to her bedroom, picked up the phone on her nightstand, dialed an extension, and said,
Jessa, can you help Charlotte get dressed?
My eyes widened, and miraculously, Jessa suddenly swept into my bedroom, smiling gleefully and shaking her head.
Girl, you'd cajole a king out of his crown.
I swear I didn't do anything. Mother simply saw me peeping and must have realized this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
All right, then, let's put your hair into a nice long braid, Jessa said as she started pulling open the drawers of my vanity. Which dress are you going to wear?
I only have one option.
I showed her the only dress that still fit me, and she helped me carefully slip it on.
You're growing too fast, she said fondly, as she ushered me to the mirror.
She stood behind me and brushed my hair. I looked at my reflection and admired the dress. I liked how blue the satin fabric was. I imagined standing next to my mother in her red dress and my father in his perfectly tailored suit. Entering my parents' forbidden, mysterious world was exciting, but nothing was more exciting than meeting the president. When the president arrived, a group of men trailed in after him, all of them in suits. They were tall and handsome, but I was too busy looking at the young man directly beside the president to notice much.
He was gorgeous. His hair was the color of sable, and although it was combed back, it was unruly at the ends and curled at the collar.
He was an inch taller than the president. His suit seemed crisper, more tailored. He was staring at me, and although his lips weren't moving and his expression revealed nothing, I could swear that his eyes were laughing at me. President Hamilton shook my mother's hand before greeting my father. I pulled my eyes away from the young man next to him and saw the president's lips curl a little as he looked down at me. When it was my turn, I took his hand.
My daughter, Charlotte.
Charlie,
I corrected. Mother smiled. She insisted on not missing the fun.
Smart girl.
The president grinned at me, gesturing to his side with obvious pride as he drew the young man beside him forward.
My son, Matthew. He's going to be president one day,
he said conspiratorially. The man that I couldn't stop staring at laughed quietly. It was a low, deep laugh, and it made me blush. Suddenly, I didn't want to shake his hand. But how could I avoid it? He took my hand in his. It was warm and dry and strong. Mine was soft and trembling.
Absolutely not, he said and winked at me.
I smiled at him shyly and realized my parents were watching us carefully.
You don't look like a president, I blurted out to President Hamilton.
What does a president look like?
Old.
President Hamilton laughed.
Give me time.
He pointed at his shiny white hair and slapped Matthew's back, then let my parents lead him into the dining room. The adults focused on talking politics and bills while I focused on the delicious food. When my plate was clean, I summoned the waiter and quietly asked about seconds.
Charlotte,
my father warned. The waiter looked at my father, wide-eyed, then at me, just as wide-eyed, and I tried to very quietly repeat the question. The president regarded me with interest. Feeling worried, I wondered if it was bad manners to ask for more before they all finished. Matthew had a serious expression on his face, but his eyes seemed to be laughing at me again. His gaze didn't leave me as he said to the waiter,
I'll have seconds too.
I shot him a grateful smile, then started feeling nervous again. His smile was so powerful, I could feel it piercing my heart. I glanced down at my hands resting on my lap and admired my dress. I hoped Matthew thought I looked pretty. Most of the guys at school did. At least, that's what they told me. As my parents talked with the president and Matthew, I fiddled with my braid, placing it on the side of my shoulder, then behind my back. Matthew's attention returned to me, and when his eyes sparkled with more quiet laughter, the pit in my stomach returned. The waiter brought us both new plates full of stuffed quail and quinoa. My parents were still looking at me as though it was too bold of me to ask for seconds in front of the president. Matthew leaned over the table and said, "Never let anyone tell you you're too young to ask for what you want."
"Oh, don't worry. Sometimes I don't ask."
This earned me a very nice laugh from Matthew. The president frowned at him, then winked at me. As Matthew turned his attention back to the group, I noticed his eyes appeared a shade lighter than black, like chocolate. I sat there trying to absorb everything, knowing that that moment, that night, would be the most exciting experience of my life. But like everything in life, it wouldn't last forever. I watched with disappointment as the president rose from his seat and began to thank my parents for dinner. I got up as well, my eyes fixed on Matthew. The way he stood, the way he walked, the way he looked. I started to wonder what he smelled like, too. I followed the group quietly toward the foyer. The president turned and tapped his presidential cheek. "A kiss, young lady." Smiling, I rose up on my toes and kissed his cheek. When I dropped back down, my gaze caught Matthew's. As if on automatic, my toes rose again. It seemed only natural that I give him a farewell kiss, too. When my lips grazed his jaw, it was hard and it tickled with a little bit of stubble. It was like kissing a movie star. He turned his head and kissed my cheek in return, and I almost gasped out loud from the surprise of feeling his lips on my cheek. Before I could compose myself, he and the president walked out the door, and all the hustle and bustle of the day turned to dead quiet. Hurrying upstairs, I watched them leave from my bedroom window. The president was ushered into the back of his shiny, black chauffeured car. Before he got in, the president slapped Matthew on the back and squeezed the back of his neck in a friendly gesture. The pit in my stomach grew into a ball as they disappeared into the car. The car started and drove down our quiet neighborhood street, little American flags flapping in the front. A trail of cars followed them, one after the other. I shut my window, closed my drapes, then took off my dress and hung it carefully. I then slipped into my flannel pajamas and eased into bed as my mother walked in.
"That was a lovely evening," my mother said. "Did you have fun?"
She smiled as though she was laughing to herself about something. I nodded honestly. I liked listening to the conversations. I liked everyone. She kept smiling.
"Matthew is handsome. You noticed, of course. He's also smart as a whip."
I nodded in silence.
"Your father and I are writing a letter to the president to thank him for spending his evening with us. Do you want to write him too?"
"No, thank you," I said primly.
She raised her brows and laughed.
"Okay, you sure? If you change your mind, leave it in the foyer tomorrow."
Mother left my room and I just lay in bed, thinking about the visit, about what the president had said about Matthew. I decided I'd write Matthew a letter, just because I couldn't stop feeling awestruck and amazed by the visit. What if I not only ended up meeting one president tonight, but two? That had to take the cake of meetings for sure. I used the first page of the stationery my grandmother sent me for my birthday, and in my best handwriting, I wrote, "I want to thank you and the president for coming. If you decide to run for president, you have my vote. I'd even be willing to join your campaign." I licked the seal and closed it firmly and set the letter on my nightstand. Then I flipped off the light switch and got under my covers. I lay in bed and in the dark. He was everywhere, on the ceiling and in the shadows and on the duvet. And I wondered if I'd ever see him again, and suddenly the thought of him never seeing me grown up felt like an ache in my chest. I'm so lost in my thoughts I had not realized Alan was studying my profile.
"A crush that's been crushed, right?"
he asks again. I turn to him, startled to realize we've already pulled over in front of my building. I laugh and get out of the cab, peering inside.
"Absolutely."
I nod more firmly this time. "I'm focused on my career now. and I shut the door behind me, waving him off.
3. Announcement. Matt. I was never the sort of kid tempted to try on my father's shoes. Too clean, too classic, too big. But oddly, his shoes are what I remember most clearly about him. Pacing a perfect circle around his desk during a tense phone call, me at his feet, building a puzzle. My father strived for perfection in all things, including his appearance. From his impeccably tailored suit to his smoothly shaved face and his tightly cropped hair. While I, young and clueless, dreamed of freedom. Freedom from the privileged life my father's success gave my mother and me. 1,000 times my father said I would be president. He told his friends' friends, and he often told me. I'd laugh and shake it off. The 7 years I spent growing up in the White House were 7 years I spent praying to get out of the White House. Politics interested me, yes. But I knew my father rarely slept. Most choices he made were wrong for a certain percentage of the population, even when they were right for the majority. My mother lost her husband the day he entered the White House. I lost my father the day he decided that being president would be his legacy. He tried juggling it all, but no human in the world could run the country and still have energy for his wife and teenage son. I focused on my grades and succeeded in school, but forming friendships was hard. I couldn't casually invite anyone over to the White House. My life as I imagined it after the White House would be focused on work, perhaps on Wall Street. I'd have the freedom to do all the things I never could under America's watchful eye. Father ran for re-election, and won. Then, 3 years into his second term, an unhappy citizen put 2 bullets in him, one in his chest, the other his stomach. It's been thousands of days since, too many years spent living in the past. Now, as I secure my cufflinks and smooth my tie, I think back to those shoes and realize that I'm about to step into them. Ready, sir? I nod, and he pulls back the curtain. The world is watching. They've been speculating, hoping, wondering. Will you? Won't you? Please do. Please don't. He'll win if he runs. He doesn't stand a chance. I wait for the noise to settle down, lean into the microphone and say, "Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to announce that I'm officially running for President of the United States of America."
4. The News. Charlotte. The morning after my birthday, I notice the light on my answering machine is blinking. I press play, half listening as I lie back in bed, trying to shake my grogginess away.
"Charlotte, it's your mother. Call me." "Charlotte, answer your cell."
After a third similar message, I get up, put coffee on, and return my mother's calls.
"You heard the rumor?"
she asks in place of a greeting. "I've been asleep for the past 7 hours. I squint. "What rumor?"
"It's on national television, and we've been invited to his campaign inaugural, Charlie. You must come. Time for you to get your feet wet in politics."
My first thought is the same I've had for years, that I don't want to be in politics. I've seen and heard too many things being the daughter of a senator. I've lived through much already.
"It's time for you to make a difference. Take steps in embracing your own personal power," my mother continues.
And while she rambles on, I turn on the television. Matt's face flashes before me. His sun-bronzed, slightly stubbled, perfectly symmetrical, hot-as-hell face. He stands behind a podium, a place he's never been photographed before. The paparazzi have caught him unaware on dates, on the beach, everywhere. But never, as far as I know, behind a podium. A black suit and crimson tie cover a body fit for a GQ cover, his suit so black that the suits of the men surrounding him seem gray in comparison. He's been known to be an outdoorsman who loves physicality, who keeps in shape by experiencing every adventure and sport nature has to offer. Swimming, tennis, hiking, horseback riding. His lean, athletic build, clearly defined beneath the fitted suit, is certainly a testament to that. A full, rather seductive mouth curves into a smile as he speaks into the microphone. Beneath him, a black line scrolling across the screen says,
Breaking news, Matthew Hamilton has confirmed his intention to run for president. I read the line again. I also vaguely listen to his voice on the TV. He has such a delicious voice, it's making the little hairs on my arms stand at attention. Running for president of the United States of America. Something inside of me somersaults. I'm hit by a series of emotions, shock, excitement, disbelief. I fall back on the couch and press a hand to my stomach to keep the winged things inside of it from moving. My mother continues telling me how much my father and she would love my company, but I hardly listen. How can I, when Matthew Hamilton is on TV? He is so gorgeous, I bet every woman watching wants him to father all of her babies, put those lips on nobody but her, and use those eyes to look at nobody else. This God, the Prince of America, has decided to run for president? He speaks from a place of confidence and strength. I know firsthand that politics are not for wimps. I know what my father has gone through to reach and keep his seat in the Senate. I know the kind of sacrifice, patience, and discipline that serving the people requires. I know that despite doing his best, criticisms have kept him awake at night more times than he'd care to admit. I know that being president cannot be easier than being senator, and I know that Matt hadn't really wanted this. But after his father was murdered, our economy went to shit. We're all basically at the point of reaching out for lifesavers, and the situation is so dire that there are probably not enough to go around. So he's doing it? Stepping up?
So there's really no excuse for you not to come, my mother continues.
Okay.
Did you just agree, Charlotte?
My mother sounds so shocked that I smile at having managed to surprise her.
Hell, even I'm surprised that I'm not singing my same song.
Blame it on my birthday and another year spent waiting for a big neon sign to point me toward my ideal life path that has yet to appear. Another year spent waiting for that, this is who you are, this is what you are meant to do moment. When I remember the night the Hamiltons came for supper, I felt like I was touched by something exciting, historical, and meaningful. That moment branded me in so many ways. You cannot express in words the awe, honor, and complete amazement of being faced with the President of the United States. It makes you want to do great things, too. Maybe seeing Matt again will bring me clarity. Or at the very least, I might actually get to know him and see what he is made of. See if he really is capable of living up to the Hamilton name. I'm curious. I'm intrigued. Maybe I'm even a little bit in need of convincing myself that my infantile crush has indeed been crushed. Or maybe, like the rest of the world, I'm just excited. That there's finally a man who can really earn the respect of both parties, cut through the red tape, and get serious work done. I'll go with you, I agree, much to my mother's delight. When is it? 5. Still That Girl. Charlotte. I've moved into my own flat close to the offices of Women of the World, one bedroom and a sizable closet. My wardrobe is filled with more power suits than anything. They're a must for hunting down sponsors and job opportunities for our women, new opportunities that inspire them to be better. But there's a short row of dresses in the crammed closet of my new apartment. I might not have dozens of options to choose from, but the night of the kickoff party, I have more picks than the one dress I had when I was 11. Kayla is dying of jealousy, and Alan and Sam have been hinting on being willing to escort me to the event in case I need an escort. I've declined since I'm going with my mother. My father, as a current Democrat, is not really up to coming to support an independent candidate. But my mother has a mind of her own. And when it comes to anything Hamilton, it seems so do I. I wonder what sort of man Matt Hamilton has become, and if he's the player he's made out to be through the years as the fascination of the press with him has continued to grow. I end up going for the yellow dress with an open back. I comb my red hair down my back, add a shiny crystal clip to hold it back from my forehead, and head downstairs, where my mother waits in the Lincoln Town Car. The last time I saw Matt, it was 2 years and 8 months after that dinner at my parents'. I'm taller then, officially a woman, and like my mother, I'm wearing a black dress. He's dressed in black as well, standing next to his mother, who looks tiny and beat up as he puts his arm around her. He's older, a little thicker, a lot more masculine, and his eyes don't shine on me anymore when I follow my father and mother to give him my condolences. And then I sit in the back,
trying to hold back my tears as I watch Matt bury his father. His mother cried softly, delicately, and the country cried. He stood there strong and proud, the boy his father raised, the one trained to weather catastrophe, and go on. White decorations peppered with silver and blue surround us. I'm a little bit outside of my comfort zone when I follow my mother into the ballroom. Walking through the doors is like opening the pages of a living encyclopedia full of important names, politicians, philanthropists, heirs and heiresses, along with people in positions at the top of the country's best schools, Duke, Princeton, Harvard. And suddenly, all the artists and writers and poets, Pulitzer and Nobel Prize winners and faces you see in the blockbuster films of the year, they somehow disappear with Matt Hamilton sharing this same room. He's at the far end, tall and broad-shouldered, his hair dark and gleaming under the lights. He's wearing a perfect black suit and a tie the color of platinum, his shirt crisp white and contrasting against the gold-kissed hue of his skin. My mouth dries up and my body seems to start working a little harder to pump the blood through my system. It's not easy to lose track of Hamilton. He's the darling of the media. From the rebellious teenager to the private college guy to the man he's become, the youngest contender in history, my mother says he represents the golden years his father gifted us with. Growth, jobs, peace. I want that. Every one of the thousands of supporters here tonight wants that. As we wade through the glittering crowd, the air scented with the most expensive perfumes, I greet some of my mother's acquaintances, all dressed to impress. The famous always gravitated toward the Hamiltons, their presence silent endorsements. It's been 9 years since the last time I saw Matt, give or take. I actually know the exact time, but I want to pretend I didn't count so religiously. He's taller than he even seemed on TV, looming over the others by a good few inches. And God, he's all man. Sable hair, espresso eyes, a Greek god's body. Confidence streaks out of every pore. Even the black suit he wears is perfect. If there was ever a man with an air around him of privilege and success, Matthew Hamilton is it. The Hamiltons have been influential since they were born, bloodlines dating back to English lords and ladies. They called him prince when his father was alive. Now he's about to take the king's throne. When People magazine called him the sexiest man alive, Forbes called him the most successful businessman. He disappeared for a few years after law school, quietly building, expanding his family's real estate empire. Judging by the amount of press vans outside the inaugural party ballroom, the world is being taken by storm with his return. Every headline today had the name Hamilton on it. I've never seen so many important people together in one place in my life. I can't believe all of them came out in support. The enormity of Matt's reach hits me, and I'm suddenly awed that I could even snag an invitation to his kickoff party in the first place. In Women of the World, we assist women going through rough moments in their lives, divorce, health problems, and trauma. The spirit of the organization is helpful and humble. Here, it's along the same lines, everyone united for a common cause. But the air here is extraordinarily powerful. The people here are the movers and shakers of the world. And tonight, their world revolves around Matthew Hamilton. Matt is suddenly enveloped by an actress. She's doting on him and wearing the skimpiest dress to flash her toned muscles and perky ass and breasts. My stomach twists around in part envy, part awe. I have no idea what I could talk to that woman about, but I'm starstruck all the same. "He's so handsome," my mother whispers as we head his way. My nervousness increases. There are already too many people around him, waiting for an introduction. I watch him shake hands, the firmness of his grip, the way he makes eye contact. So direct. The knot in my stomach keeps tightening. "I think I'll just take a seat over there," I whisper to my mother and point to a sitting area with the least number of people milling about. "Oh, Charlotte," I hear her say. "I've already met him. Let the others have their chance." I don't let her protest anymore and instantly cut to my secluded spot. From there, I scan the crowd. It's so easy for me to strike up conversation with people at work, but this crowd would intimidate anyone. I spot J-Lo in a designer white dress at the corner of the room. I look down at my yellow gold dress and wonder why I chose such a standout color when it would be better to blend in. Maybe I thought fake it till you make it would work. That I would look as sophisticated as everybody else here, and soon feel that way. I move my gaze back to the cause of all the buzz today. Everyone wants to greet the Hamilton prince, and I can see it is going to take a while for my mother to succeed, especially when men keep trying to pull him away from the line. I scan the ballroom for the restrooms and spot them at the far end. Easing to my feet, I keep my gaze straight ahead as I walk past the line, past the gorgeous Matt, among a group of politicians, and toward the ladies, where I slip inside and check my makeup and freshen up. Three women are gushing as they primp in front of the mirrors. I want to wear him like a fur, the cougar woman purrs. I laugh inwardly and yet pretend I'm not amused by their fawning, especially when they're old enough to be his mother. Once I exit, I'm headed straight down the hall toward my table, when I step on the hem of my dress as I enter the carpeted ballroom area. I glance down at my shoes and lift my dress up an inch, never slowing my stride, when I bump into a large figure. An arm flies out to steady me by the waist. My breath catches and I freeze, registering the hand on my waist, the side of my breast pressing into a bulging forearm, and I look up, up, at a flat, flat chest, the length of a platinum tie, up a tanned throat, and stare straight into Matt Hamilton's dark eyes. I gasp, "Mr. Hamilton, I'm sorry, I didn't see you, I was..." His grip is warm, and noticing that he's slowly releasing me as he realizes I've got my balance makes me stutter. "I was having dress trouble," I rush out. "I shouldn't have worn this dress." I'm completely overwhelmed by his presence. Lean and athletic. Larger than life. Face so chiseled and beautiful. All of him so hot, my eyes hurt. I hate that my toes are curling under his stare. "I truly didn't see you. For the record, I'm not some crazed fangirl. This isn't an attempt to get your attention, not at all."
"And yet you most definitely have it."
His voice is rich and deep, but his tone is playful and his eyes are twinkling. It's hard to swallow all of a sudden. His lips start curving and they are gorgeous and plush. Lips to kiss. To swoon over and fantasize about. Gosh, his smile is lovely, even if it lasts only a second. "Again, forgive me," I shake my head, exhaling nervously. "I'm Charlotte."
"I know who you are."
Although his lips aren't curved into a smile anymore, his eyes are sparkling even brighter, if that's possible. I can hardly take this exchange. This guy is the closest thing to a god in our country.
"I'm pretty certain I still have your letter somewhere," he says, low.
Matt Hamilton knows who I am. Matt Hamilton still has my letter. He was in college then. Now the man before me is fully matured, seasoned to perfection. And goodness, I can't believe I wrote him a letter. "Now I'm doubly embarrassed," I whisper, ducking my head. When I raise my eyes, Matt just keeps looking at me with a direct gaze I'm sure hugely impacts everyone it ever lands on.
"You said you'd help me if I ever ran."
I shake my head in consternation, laughing lightly at the idea. "I was 11. I was just a girl."
"Are you still that girl?"
"Matt?" Some guy taps his shoulder and calls him over. He nods at the man, then simply looks at me as I stand here, puzzled over his question. "You're busy. I'll just go," I say, and I dip away, taking a few steps before I glance past my shoulder. He's watching me walk away. He looks at me as if he's a little bit intrigued and a little bit laughing inside, or maybe I just made it up. Because the next instant he turns around, his broad back tapering down to a small waist, providing a gorgeous visual as he heads back to greet his excited supporters. "I cannot believe you were able to say hello before I did. That line is a killer." My mother is suddenly at my side. "The big rollers keep pulling him aside. I'll be back." She heads back to the line while I take my seat at the table once more, chatting for a while with one of the couples there. I'm still reeling from the encounter.
"Oh, Senator Wells's daughter, a pleasure. I can't say I know him, but he's a good man. He voted against Hugh, really,"
his wife interrupts, stopping the elderly senator.
"Let's go say hello to Lewis and Martha," she says, coaxing him away.
I'm relieved when they head off, dreading to say anything to embarrass myself. I'm still reeling because of my encounter with Matt Hamilton, and I can't seem to focus on anything else. I watch as my mother waits patiently as 6 people before her greet him, until finally she hugs him, and she looks tiny and feminine in his tall, muscled form. When they release their embrace, I'm shocked to notice her pointing in my direction. My stomach caves in on itself when his gaze follows the direction of her finger. Oh my God, is my mother pointing at me? Is Matt looking at me? Our gazes meet, and for the flash of a second, there's something in his eyes. He nods as if he's telling her he's said hello already. As they talk, his gaze stays on me. I'm briefly aware of the curiosity of the room as they collectively wonder where their new candidate is looking, but I can't pull my eyes away long enough to verify who exactly is staring. God, he even stands like untitled American royalty. He's grown up to be the most delicious mix of polished and earthy, and somewhere beneath that focused gaze I can see a unique primitiveness that pulls at me. A passing woman leans over to my ear. He's as hot, smooth, and rich as a lava cake, and he makes politics thrilling, she says. I glance at her, then move my gaze back to the smoldering Matt Hamilton as he continues greeting the line. He's almost done, but I'm sure it won't be for long. A shadow falls over half of his face, but I can see his attention is now focused on an elderly couple, his smile barely there, but still so sexy and gorgeous it makes my lungs work a little extra hard. Once he finishes speaking to the couple and he's able to pull free, he starts adjusting his cufflinks and starts heading in my direction. He is heading in my direction. The hottest guy in the room is heading in my direction, and my heart just flipped over 1,000 times in 1 second inside my chest. I glance around the room in an attempt at la-di-da nonchalance, but I'm not that good an actress. I'm afraid to look into his gorgeous face and know that he knows the effect he has on me. It takes a moment to gather my courage, wary to see the expression he's wearing, even warier to find him looking straight at me. He's not looking at me. Someone stopped him to chat. I exhale. But before I can release the tension in my shoulders, Matt pats the middle-aged man on the back, shakes his hand, and starts in my direction again. I sit here, struggling with these feelings I can't suppress. I want to talk to him. I want to pick his brain. I'm curious and professionally thirsty, and maybe I want to accidentally press myself against him one more time, so I can smell him. No, definitely not that last. Anyway, I'm certain that with a drink I'll be a little less nervous, but it's too late for drinks now. Before I can stand to greet him once more, Matt fucking Hamilton, the complete American candy bar, sinks into the seat behind me, eyes coming level with mine as he shifts forward. For the record, I'm not some crazy stalker man just attempting to get your attention. His voice is so close that it feels like he just ran a fingertip down my spine. And the timbre is just like sex on silken sheets. His scent is a prelude to sex. Even his warm, dark espresso eyes seem an invitation for sex. I laugh, flushing. His lips twitch, and his smile? It is pure, wicked foreplay. The kind girls like me only watch on TV. The kind that sneaks in unnoticed until your panties are everywhere except where they belong. Oh God, he is the hottest thing I've ever seen. I'm struggling to suppress a little shiver from inside. Don't worry, I know who you are too.
That's right. But I bet you don't know how serious I am about getting an answer.
Excuse me? He just smiles and surveys my face, taking me in silence. I can't help but do the same. His features are even more chiseled now, 1001% male, and every visible inch of skin on his body seems to have been kissed recently by sunlight. I notice the luster of his gorgeous hair and eyes and the way he smells like expensive cologne, the space his body occupies and the warmth emanating from every athletic inch of him makes me feel hot all over. He's really here, in front of me. My stomach flips, and I laugh self-consciously and nervously run my hands down my dress. At that time, you were dead set on not running. How was I supposed to know? I mean, look at you now, I say, signaling to him. To Matt freaking Hamilton, sitting right next to me, obviously feeling vastly entertained by my nervousness.
I know what you're thinking,
He warns me, his expression sober but with a playful glint in his eyes.
That you're gorgeous, I wonder? That I don't know how you have this effect on me and why I still, after all these years, want you?
Trust me, you don't, I whisper, flushing. He shifts forward and grabs a strand of my loose red hair, tugging it and watching me lick my lips in nervousness.
You're wondering why I ran.
No, I'm wondering why you're here talking to me.
I don't say that. I just trail off and watch him curl the strand of my red hair around the tip of his index finger, then slowly release it, watching me as he uncurls his finger very, very slowly and lets it fall.
So how are you?
He asks, his voice deep.
Good. Not as good as you seem to be, I say.
Gosh, am I flirting? Please don't be flirting, Charlotte.
I doubt that. I thoroughly doubt that,
Matt says, his voice still so deep and the smile still in his eyes, but not on his lips. He seems so focused on me that it's like he doesn't realize everyone is glancing in his direction. I'm nervous in his presence, but at the same time I don't want him to leave.
You know, I've met you 3 times and realize I don't know anything about you other than the occasional story I hear, I blurt out. They're so contrary, I don't even know which to believe.
None of them.
Oh, come on, Matthew, I laugh.
Then I realize I called him by his name.
I mean, Mr. Ham-
Matt. Charlotte. Unless you still like to go by Charlie.
God, no. Are you dead set on embarrassing me today?
Not really. Though I can't deny I find the pink on your cheeks quite charming.
His lips curve sensually, and there's a flutter in my stomach when he winks at me. I shyly glance down and realize that the hard little points of my nipples are popping out against my dress. Mortified, I lift my arms to fold them in front of me, but not before I catch his eyes noticing, too. He slowly lifts his gaze to mine, his expression revealing nothing as he pulls his attention back to the crowded group.
I should get going. But I won't say goodbye.
He raises one sleek eyebrow in meaning, pushing his chair back and standing to his full height. His words leave me confused. I can't manage to answer quickly enough, so he simply smiles at me and leaves me to ponder them the rest of the night. I have no idea how long my mother and I stay there, really, but I know exactly 3 times that I glanced in Matt's direction, he turned to meet my gaze, as if he has some sort of radar or simply sensed me watching him. My stomach went crazy each of those times, and I jerked my eyes away. When we're ready to leave, my mother takes the time to say her goodbyes. I consider grabbing Matt's attention to wish him good luck before heading out. I just really wish that we hadn't been interrupted when we were and that we'd been able to talk some more. But he is busy when I search for him through the crowd, and I don't want to interrupt. As I follow my mother to the door, one of her old congressman friends stops to say goodbye to us both. I smile and nod, and past his shoulder, I see Matt's eyes meet mine and realize he'd been watching me leave. He smiles at me and cants his head in the barest of nods. And there's something about that smile and that nod that fills me with an odd sense of anticipation. For what? I just don't know. I ride in the back of the town car with my mother, sort of unable to stop replaying the things Matt said to me when he came over, sort of hating the fact that I still can't control the things he brings out in me.
He's going to win, my mother says softly. Do you think so? I ask her.
The wanting for him to win suddenly hits me with so much force it almost overwhelms me. Sitting there talking with him, I sensed a genuine quality in him and a strength that makes you want to cling to it, which is silly, really. But don't you want a strong president? You want someone who can keep his head in a crisis, someone confident, and someone real.
Well, his announcement caused quite a stir, but the Democrats and the Republicans won't let go of the presidency that easily, my mother says, and I press my lips together.
As I start to get out of the car, my mother says,
Charlotte, you know how much I hate you living alone here.
Mom, I groan, shaking my head with a chiding frown, then wave her off and shut the door behind me. That night is not the first time in the past 11 years that I dream about Matt Hamilton again, but it's the first one where the guy in the dream looks exactly like he did tonight. 6. The next morning. Charlotte. I'm still thinking about the previous evening as I head to Women of the World.
I've been working with my mother since I was 18, winging both my studies in Georgetown and social service hours here. I help run the organization, and my days are usually a combination of fundraising, job hunting, and supportive talks with the women we take under our wing. I've just gotten off a phone call when a tall man with a full head of salt and pepper hair appears at my office door and knocks.
Hi, Charlotte. Good morning.
He speaks with the familiarity of old friends. I recognize his face, but I can't pinpoint where I know him from.
Benton Carlyle.
He extends his hand, which I promptly shake.
Unfortunately, we didn't get the chance to be introduced last night. I'm Matt Hamilton's campaign manager.
My heart skips, regardless of me wanting it to or not. Oh, of course. Mr. Carlyle, I'm sorry. I haven't had coffee yet. Please sit down.
I won't be staying long. I'm simply here on behalf of Matt.
Matt? I question.
Yes, he wants to formally extend you an invitation to join his campaign.
If seeing Matt's campaign manager in my office wasn't shock enough, this certainly is.
He told me you were the first in line to help, and he'd hate to refuse his first offer.
My eyes widen. Mr. Carlyle? He laughs.
I admit I was taken aback. Most of our recruits have experience, something which you have nothing of, and yet here I am, first thing in the morning.
He looks at me as if wondering what I did to deserve this, and I don't like his possible assumptions. I agree that I have no experience. I appreciate the offer, but I'll have to decline.
Fair enough.
But please send my best wishes to Mr. Hamilton.
I will.
He leaves his card.
In case there's anything we can do for you.
We shake hands, and I watch the man depart as elegantly and soundlessly as he came in. When he is out of view, I sag in my seat, stunned. The rest of the day I focus on busy work, but when I head home to my apartment, I sit on the couch, my precious cat Doodles perched on my lap, and I wonder why I declined the offer. I've been wanting to do something important on my own, out of my parents' shadows. Working on a campaign, wouldn't that be thrilling? Exciting? Why didn't I leap? I wonder if my fear has to do with the same reason it would be thrilling and exciting, because it would involve Matthew Hamilton, and he is both what inspires me to agree and makes me crave to keep a safe distance. That evening, I watch a TV show where one of the candidates is discussing purely incendiary things about poor immigrants, poor refugees, and how he'll raise taxes so that we can become the world's greatest army again. He makes it sound as if refusing to help those who are suffering is the only way we could ever return to our golden days. I press my lips together and turn off the television. Maybe I can help. I believe in him. I believe he's better than any of the options they've been tossing around on TV. I grab Carlyle's card and call him. Mr. Carlyle, this is Charlotte Wells. I've been thinking about the offer. And yes, I want to help. I'm ready to be used in any capacity, and I'm ready to start Monday. There's a stunned silence. Then,
Matt will be pleased.
He sends me the address where I should present myself on Monday. Then I hang up and stare, wide-eyed, at my phone. Holy shit. I just signed up to work on Matthew Hamilton's campaign. 7. First day. Charlotte. My eyes are fixed out the window of the back of the cab as I ride to the seat of the Matt Hamilton presidential campaign. It's a clear February day. D.C.'s quiet strength seems a permanent reminder of this being the home of the country's powerful executive seat. Sweeping monuments, carpets of green, politicians swarming its cafes and streets, Washington sits proudly and strongly as the most elegant city in the nation. There's nowhere I'd rather live. If there is something beyond here, it's just a temporary fling. My pulse is in D.C. The pulse of the nation is in D.C. If New York is the brain, Los Angeles is the beauty, D.C. is the heart. The very soul vibrating in our monuments, each one of them a testament to the strength and beauty of the American experience. So the cab takes me through the heart of it all, past the labyrinth of the Pentagon, along the Potomac, and by the Lincoln Memorial, the pristine white walls of the White House, and the dome of the Capitol. I don't know why I'm here. What possessed me to want to leave my job at Women of the World? The TV has replayed his announcement endlessly, and I've replayed the inaugural party in my head just as endlessly.
No, I do know why I'm here. Because he asked me, maybe. And because I want to take a little part in history. I get out of the cab and rummage through my purse as the two-story building, seat of the Matt Hamilton campaign, looms before us. I pay the driver, and the moment my strides start eating up sidewalk, I feel recharged with hope and anticipation. I'm led inside by a middle-aged woman with a crisp voice and an even crisper walk. "He's ready to see you." She signals to the main area of the second floor, where a group of people hover anxiously around Matt. 6 feet plus of natural athleticism, brains and hotness to the extreme, clad in gray slacks and a black shirt, all of them staring down at a long table. Matt's arms are crossed. He's frowning at some of the slogans he's being shown. "I'm not wild about this one." His voice is deep, and it hums with thoughtfulness as he taps a finger to something he doesn't like. "Reeks of bullshit, and that's not what we're about."
"We, as in he and his team." He seems like the most down-to-earth, unpretentious guy, even when he's easily the most famous.
"Charlotte." He lifts his head and sees me. And he gets that laughter in his eyes I remember so well, and I can't see what he finds so funny about me. But I smile nonetheless, his smile infectious. As he eats up the floor toward me, he's wearing that easy charm that makes everyone want to be his best friend, or his mother, or better yet, his wife. He does have that thing a reporter once said that suggests to the easily suggestible he needs some loving. A sad tilt to his eyes makes him all the more handsome. He's the man his father groomed and that a nation has waited for. Hamiltons inspire loyalty more than any other family ever has who's been in executive power. His hand clasps mine.
"Mr. Hamilton."
"Matt," he corrects. His hand is warm, big, all engulfing. I feel it slide over mine. I shake it and try to hold his gaze. But it feels, as he squeezes me in his grip, that he's squeezing my whole body. I'm nerve-wracked, and I blame the twinkle in his eyes and that handsome, love-me-take-me-home-mother-me-or-fuck-me face. He drops his hand at his side and shoves it into his pocket, and I glance at it for a second and wonder if he felt that electric rush that I felt when he touched me. He glances down at my hands, too, as if realizing how small my hand is compared to his, too.
"Settling in all right?"
"Yes, sir. I'm absolutely thrilled to be here." "Matt," someone calls. He nods at the guy who hands him a phone, reaches out with his free hand, and sets it lightly on the back of my shoulder as he nods at me.
"We'll catch up, Charlotte."
He squeezes me, the lightest bit, and the touch sears me. It's a little unexpected. And though it lasts just a second, it sends a frisson of heat shooting down my body. My toes curl in my shoes. I can't help but follow his retreating back as he lifts the cell phone to his ear and retreats to his office to take the call.
"God, I'm in so much trouble. Focus, Charlotte."
"Nope, not on his ass." I tear my gaze free and paste a smile on my face as I'm led toward my cubicle. My first day consists of a basic rundown of my duties as a political aide.
"Why did he run? He's been fiercely trying to protect his privacy for years."
Two young women talk by my desk, one dark-haired and the other with a sporty, short, blonde bob.
"True, but only for as long as he chose to be," the blonde tells the brunette.
They glance at him. I resist the urge to do the same. Matt is stepping into the limelight after years fighting for his privacy from obsessed reporters. The resourceful press would find itself filtering into Harvard when he began college, and every event where he was enlisted to help promote, he'd end up being the headline rather than the cause he was so generously trying to push. It annoyed him.
"When he offered the job, I asked him, 'Why me?' And he said, 'Why not you?'" the blonde then shares.
"Because you're so hot, no woman can work around you and think straight," she answers herself, laughing. I smile and pull my attention back to organizing my desk. My office is perfection, with a view of the city. Outside this building, it feels serene, the country on track, as always. But there's a hum inside this building, in my coworkers, in me. After settling in, I head into the small kitchenette for coffee. With a full cup, I turn the moment I hear footsteps behind me, but I miscalculate how close the newcomer is. I start when I bump into her and slosh coffee all over her shoes. I'm mortified.
"Damn it, Charlotte."
I pry my coffee-stained fingers from the cup and set it aside and grab napkins.
That didn't just happen. Your shoe.
I start to bend, but the blonde with the sporty bob bends too, getting it before I do.
Hey, it's fine. A little excitement never hurt anybody. She smiles. I'm Allison.
She puts her hand out, and I take it.
The official campaign photographer.
Charlotte.
Charlotte, I know how you can make it up to me.
She waves me after her, and we head into Matt's office as she carries her camera and stands inside. The instant I realize this is Matt freaking Hamilton's office I'm walking into, I run my fingers nervously through my hair, spotting his broad shoulders and hot self in the chair behind the desk, all gorgeous and busy as he reads some papers. As he reads,